You are listening to a very special hardcore smoshing stage diving episode of the Punk News Podcast, episode 216. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. First of all, we got to address the elephant in the room. There is no Adam White on tonight's podcast. Why, might you ask? It's because he's been fired. Fired from Punk News.
Ouch!
No, I'm just lying. Adam White is actually at the Constantine, so he's in Euphoria right now. So he will be on next week, but right now Adam White is in Bliss. But here with me, I've got three heavy hitters. I've got three guys that, when Adam White is not here, these three guys can handle. First of all, I've got with me news editor Mark Little. Mark, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm trying not to laugh at the fact that Adam is not here because he's seeing a Constantine show.
That Adam is at that's like me. At
that is Melbourne. Awesome.
We also have with us, for the first time ever, a new special guest, a newer edition of Punk News. We have articles and reviews writer Tom Trauma, an old school punk rocker. Tom Trauma, how are you doing tonight on the Punk News Podcast?
Hey now, John. We're doing well, man.
Sounds good, Tom. Glad to have you here. And also, we have a super-duper extra special guest. We have Scotty Heath, the man that runs Tank Crimes Records. And who are Tank Crimes Records, you might ask? Tank Crimes Records, they're out in Oakland, San Francisco, out in the Bay Area. They put out some heavy-duty, awesome punk rock releases. They put out stuff by Municipal Waste, Iron Reagan, Kicker, one of my very favorite bands, Kicker. They've put out so many great bands, so much great music, and plus I believe Scotty Heath has promoted some legendary Bay Area concerts. Scotty Heath, how are you tonight?
Hey, John, what's up, man? I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me on.
Scotty, we're so happy to have you here. Now, Scotty, you do promote some shows over in the Bay Area sometimes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been booking shows here in the Bay for like 11 or 12 years. I mean, as long as I've been doing the label, I've been booking shows.
Didn't you do the Mob show from like 2 or 3 years ago?
No, I wasn't, but that was the show that we figured out when we met online that we were both at the same show. I was there. I do a lot of shows over at the Oakland Metro. I've been taking it easy this year. I did a label showcase, my second, the 10 Crimes Brain Squeeze in April.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Listen, I got to interrupt Scotty. Scotty put out a record by Effed Up. He put out Year of the Dragon out this year by Effed Up. Let me tell you, it is my second favorite Effed Up release, and that's saying something because they have 85 or so records. So, Scotty, please continue. Ye, who put out one of Effed Up's very best records.
So what's your favorite Effed Up record?
Year of the Pig.
So you're saying Effed Up. Should I watch my cussing while we're talking here today?
Scotty, you can say whatever you want. If you want to say the F word, feel free. If you want to see the D word, the P word, the T word, any word, go ahead and say it.
All right, maybe I'll make up some words too.
Sounds good. So Scotty, you know, what's happening over Tank Crimes? Actually, let's talk about Tank Crimes a little bit. You know, Scotty, okay, you give away a lot of music for free. You stream almost everything on Tank Crimes. What's the status of the record label in 2014? Of a record label in 2014?
Of any record label? Well, let's start with me. So 2014 is my biggest year, for sure. I had 15 releases. My first reissues, and I did two of them. All my bands have been touring a lot and doing cool stuff. And the Brain Squeeze Fest I did was really big this year. It felt good. And so it's going good. I've been doing the label full time for like 2 years now. And it's gone from a total struggle to a little bit comfortable, actually. So, that's good. As far as what it's like to be a record label, I don't know. There's so many different things, and I have all my record label buddies that I talk to range from people just starting putting out 7 inches in tapes to other friends who have like 5 bands on the Warped Tour and are completely like doing very, very well. So it's subjective, I guess, depending on who you talk to. But the one thing I can tell you is that record label owners are a unique breed, and it doesn't seem to matter what music you do. We can all like sit down and like bore the shit out of everybody else around while we talk shop.
Scotty, how do you explain the phenomena that most record labels are hemorrhaging money like crazy, that downloading is higher than it's ever been, but yet certain labels, like your label, are doing well? What is the cause of that phenomena?
Well, the thing is like, I'm part of that. So when I started, I never saw, like, the CD boom of the 90s or whatever. So I never, like, downloading didn't really hurt me. It's actually just helped me. But that's a sign of the times. Instead of having to figure out downloading and free music and music stealing or borrowing or sharing, whatever you want to say, I just came up through it. So it's always just been a part. I think Ten Crumbs was one of the first labels on Bandcamp. And I've just been giving away the music for free. Some downloads get over-downloaded, so I have to charge a few dollars. But I don't know. I mean, I just try to put out good records. And if they don't get them from me and they want them, they're going to get them somewhere else as far as downloads, you know? So I might as well, like, get those fuckers on my email list if they want my stuff for free, and then I can just keep, like, pushing everything else down their throat. And the donations-based thing works out, because for every, like, 50 people that do it free, somebody throws down, like, 10 bucks. So there you go.
Now, Scotty, you've got a lot of awesome bands on your label. What are some bands that we should really be excited about? What do you have coming out in the next year or the next 6 months?
Well, the most exciting thing that's coming up next spring, it'll be the biggest project I've ever worked on, which is the new Ghoul album.
Oh, why don't you tell listeners about this band, Ghoul? I enjoy Ghoul quite a bit. They've sort of got I don't want to make a direct comparison, but they've sort of got a Gwar vibe, and in fact, Odorous Urungus was on a Ghoul track once.
Correct. So the thing about Ten Crimes is I don't really have a lot of bands. I have a lot of releases. I do EPs and splits and stuff like that. And a lot of the bands that I've worked with that people would recognize their names actually have homes on bigger labels. But Ghoul is basically my current working band that's actually on the label. And every release that they have is on Tank Crimes, and we plan on continuing to work together. So where I'm at now, to have a brand new record of a band that's going to tour and whose fan base is growing like exponentially, that's what's really exciting for me right now. And I'm kind of keeping my plate light because of that.
Why don't you tell the listeners about this band, Ghoul? Like, what is that? What do they do that's special? How are they unique? Because they're an extremely unique band.
Okay, brace yourself. Ghoul are hooded cannibals from the country of Creepsylvania, where their fascist government has banned all forms of music, including, you know, rock and roll, heavy metal, punk. And Ghoul lives in the catacombs of Creepsylvania, playing their style of music they dubbed splatter thrash, which is a mix of a couple genres that go easy together, like thrash and death metal, but they put surf rock into their music. And
It
really works. It totally works. And so their stage show, the music doesn't sound anything like Gwar, but you can't, if you see them live, you can't not compare them, because they have a huge stage show. You know, they decapitate people. The blood squirts all over the crowd. They have a giant robot that fights a giant monkey. There's a voodoo priest who bites the head off a chicken and, like, baptizes the crowd again in more blood. There's some new characters that just came on the scene this year, a motorcycle gang leader and a new, like, fascist police boss. And the story actually is super detailed and runs chronologically from the first release up until the 7th, I think, we just did this summer. So,
well, that's wild. And also, I think you just re-released the first Dystopia record, didn't you?
Yeah, correct. Human Equals Garbage, it just came out. It actually wasn't supposed to be out for another 2 weeks, but the production went really fast. And so it showed up like 2 weeks ago, and we just decided to start shipping them. A, it's a reissue, so it's not like anything new. B, a label my size, release dates are really just so I can get press because the press works around them. And so, yeah, it's out. It's shipping. It's been really exciting, like, watching them arrive at people's houses because I can follow that with a hashtag. And so watching people so stoked that their Dystopia records are arriving right now is really cool. And for me, it's like, this is my second reissue. I did Final Conflict earlier this year. And that's just, it's fucking cool to me that I'm, you know, like given the responsibility, you know, to handle these records that are really a lot of people's like favorite records, and that I'm at the point where I can handle it. It's really cool.
Just in case the listeners don't know, Dystopia is a really cool band. I would describe them as stoner metal crust punk, you know, very heavy, very aggressive, very, I guess, rooted though in riff music, very, very political, very dark sounding. The guitar player Miles is now in Kicker, which is one of my very favorite bands. But Dystopia has actually a very interesting – now, Dystopia is a very – I mean, they're a very punk-slash-metal band. I mean, they're as legit as it gets. But they have a very interesting story about Sublime that I think Scotty knows. And I think this goes to show that there's more to Sublime than most people think, because I'm very pro-Sublime myself.
Yeah, I'm a Sublime fan too. But the story is, which I just started doing like – I mean, you saw this, but I started doing like Tank Crimes Fun Facts – just because I always think of wacky things that have happened with the bands, and especially now that I'm working with older and older bands, that like it's just interesting. But the story goes is that Brad Noel had a party, and it was an after party, so it wasn't a scheduled show, but he basically invited a whole show back to his warehouse and then had Dystopia set up on his gear that was already set up in his warehouse. And they played, and Brad also sang a song with them at that show. And something that's cool is that somebody who was at the show chimed in on Facebook after I posted it, which was awesome. Because it's one of those things, like, someone could just be like, ah, oh, fuck that, that never happened. But somebody chimed in, was like, yeah, I was there, it was awesome.
Well, there you have it, kids. One of the crustiest, darkest punk rock bands ever played with the Sunny Sublime. Although I think, Scotty, you and I agree that Sublime is actually extremely clever, and there's way more to Sublime than I guess you would hear from their radio singles. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I somebody made a really funny comment too, and you're gonna like this, John. Somebody was like, "Yes," and a young sturgeon was at that show and formed Choking Victim in his brain, which I thought made a lot of sense. Dystopia meets Sublime equals. You know,
I back at 100%, and I love all three of those bands. So let's get this podcast started. So let's kick off with a song. Scotty, I believe you have three curated songs for us. What should we start off with first?
Well, I thought we'd be talking about Ghoul, and like I said, those are my number one guys. I gotta pump them. This is a track off a split they did with Cannibus Corpse earlier this year, and it's called Spill Your Guts.
This is Ghoul doing Spill Your Guts, and you can get it at tankcrimes.com, correct?
Correct. Twisted at the lap, your fucking butt. Spill your guts.
And we are back. That was a fierce track. I love Ghoul. If you get a chance to see Ghoul live, see him live, you'll be sold instantly. But let's get today's podcast kicked off. We're going to talk about stage dives, because everybody in the punk rock world has been talking about stage dives lately. Because what happened was, it all stems from two Joyce Manor shows. What happens is that Joyce Manor's Jacksonville show, frontman Barry Johnson stopped mid-song to bring a stage diver off stage because he thought he was stage diving, I guess, too erratically, too wildly. Then their next show on Friday in Houston, Texas, he did a little speech at the beginning of the show saying that no one could stage dive, and if anybody did stage dive, he would stop the show and yell at the people, sort of echoing Fugazi. Then after he got some blowback from that, Barry Johnson did put a post online basically saying this: I was not able to watch people being hurt, so I asked people not to act in a way that was hurting people. If that means you don't support the band, I respect that. If you don't want to attend the shows, we respect that. If you've bought a ticket to the show and want your money back because you want it, your experience to be stage diving, we will refund you. I don't have an issue with anyone's lifestyle. I apologize for losing my cool in Houston. I saw someone whose full intention was to harm people and was upset. I look forward to playing music in a safe environment for everyone from here on out. And that really ignited a firestorm, I mean, all across the punk rock community, all the way to the harder stuff, Tank Crimes, all the way to the softer stuff, you know, Restoration style, tiny moving parts style. A lot of people, basically, a lot of people said they're either pro-stage diving or anti-stage diving. Candy Hart said, thank you, Joyce Manor, for getting it right. I almost died in a pit, and I didn't want to be hurt as a teen. Balance and Composure agreed with Joyce Manor's stance. However, there were some people that were pro-stage diving, like myself. This is Hardcore Fest 2014 said, we support stage dives. Nightbird said, I'm all for stage diving, unless you're bad at it, in which case, ew, cut it out. Surprisingly, on the Punk News website, most of the kids said stuff. I'll just read a couple of quotes that like summarize what people say. Stage diving is dumb. Someone else said, I don't stage dive. Sometimes I hate stage divers, but I'm pro stage diver. I love Joyce Manor, and Barry was cool when I met him. I'm not really big on stage dives. Other one said, you shouldn't stage dive at all. Someone else said, why can't people just enjoy shows like I do, standing perfectly still? However, on the Punk News Facebook, people were clearly pro-stage dive. So I guess we should preface this. I don't want to drag this out too much to my intro, but we should somewhat be happy that being pro or con stage diving is something we can even, you know, be concerned about. Because, you know, in Africa, you know, where people are starving, you know, they're not worried about stage diving. You know, in India, where they got, you know, sweatshop slaves, they're not worried about stage diving. So
they don't have the stage diving lifestyle.
So they should be appreciative. I mean, we should be appreciative that is even something we need to worry about. But on the other hand, I mean, you can say it's a speech issue. If that's how you want to demonstrate, however you want to demonstrate, then eroding on that right is kind of a big issue. So I'm just going to throw it open. I guess we'll go straight. We'll let Scotty speak last, but we'll start with Mark. Mark, it's been real hot with the stage dives. A lot of people will say you shouldn't stage dive at all. Some people say you should totally stage dive. Where do you stand on the stage diving battle?
Yeah, it's really hard to take a stance on this because, you know, as a middle-aged guy, you know, I've been on both sides of it because as a younger man, I totally participated in the whole stage diving thing. Even as recently as a year ago, 2 years ago, I totally stage dive as well. But also, I think about it as a person that has certain physical issues. I've got a back issue, so people that are listening to this know. And having to sit there or stand there at a show and be worried about, this is a great song, I love this song, and oh my God, I've got to worry about this asshole that's jumping out in front of me, and I've got to hold him up, and he might crush me, and I don't know what's going on. I mean, honestly, I see both sides of it, and right now, I hate to say it. Wow, I really even hate to say that. I hate to say it, but I'm kind of anti-stage dive right now just because I don't want to go to a show and worry about somebody that's jumping on top of me, and I've got to deal with that person. I've got to worry about the people that are around me, and I think about the people that are in front of me, behind me. I'm empathetic like that. At the same time, I also think about the fact that there's a great energy that comes from seeing people that are stage diving when you're standing in the back, if you know what I'm saying. And so, you know, it goes both ways, but if we're talking about a safety issue, I'm going to go on the anti-stage dive stance, and I'll side with Ian MacKay and Fugazi, because honestly, we're all there to have a good time, and we're all there to enjoy the same thing. We want to be together, and having to worry about somebody jumping on top of me, it gets me a bit much.
Tom, where do you stand on the stage diving
debate? You know, I guess I really don't.
Tom Trauma.
Yeah, I made that name up a long time ago, but I really don't have an issue with it, and the reason for that being, When they're diving off the stage, as long as they don't mess with the band's equipment, you know, of course, that goes without saying. But at least you have a chance to defend yourself, kind of put your arms up. Or how many times have we seen the Red Sea part and some guy go flopping onto the ground, which might not entirely be cool, but at least you have a choice to it. What really bothers me is the crowd surfing that starts in the back, and you're harmlessly, you know, you're watching the show up front, and somebody kicks you in the back of the head. That tends to be my issue. The stage diving thing, you know, I'll either get out of the way, defend myself, whatever. As long as they're not as big as me jumping on me, you know?
You know, my opinion is the following, and really it's the do unto others rule. I'm very pro-stage. I've never stage dived myself because I think I'm too big to do it. I weigh 215 pounds, so that's probably too big to be stage diving. So, but I'm very pro-stage diving for a number of reasons. A, I really do think it makes a more exciting show. You know, when you go see Off, when you go see Cro-Mags, when you go see Andrew W.K., there's bodies flying all over, people flying in the air, people flying across the floor. It's awesome. It's great fun. It really does make the show more exciting. That being said, I think the rule that basically, if you want to stand in the back and not get hassled, people should not hassle you. If you want to stage dive or mosh, go to the front. And I think it's a great system to do it. You know, people that say, oh, I want it to be a safe place, I'm not even sure that it is a punk rock's venue to be a, quote, safe place, at least from stage diving or moshing, you know? Your house should be a safe place. I don't know if a punk rock venue should be a safe place, at least for moshing and that kind of a thing. Further, what people say, well, I should be able to stand at the front of the stage and not be hassled. But the other hand is, I don't think I agree with that. I think you should be able to express yourself how you want to express yourself, so long as you don't hurt other people, you know? And so if people say, no stage diving, no moshing, it means the people that you like to express themselves that way or express that art can't, just because other people are annoyed by it. So I think that's really quite tyrannical, really, to say that you can't stage dive or you can't mosh, because you're saying, unless you express yourself in the way that I express myself, you're not welcome in this place. So like I said, I think the system of if you're in the back or people aren't moshing, don't mosh into those people. People in the front, if they want to mosh or they want to stage dive, I think it makes for a fun, exciting punk rock show. I mean, it's punk rock, you know, it's not indie rock, it's not Neil Diamond.
Okay, but let me say this. If you have a person that's in the front that doesn't want to mosh, but is into seeing the band and being up front and getting that experience, what about them?
Well, then we're at an impasse, because how about the guy that is at the front that wants to dance around and shake his body? How about him?
Well, that's great, but what you're saying is essentially that the person that wants to be at the front and experience it without having to get slammed into and getting physically hurt is at a disadvantage.
But if we say that you can't slam around, then the guy dancing and slamming around at the front is at a disadvantage.
You know, Mark, a few years ago, I just basically decided I'm going to stand back behind the pit, because I'm sick of getting my kidneys smashed, and you know, that's just the way I do it. But once in a while, I work my way up front. But
Scotty Tank Rhymes, you've put out some heavy, nasty records. Cool has got a wild show. Municipal Waste has got a wild show. Iron Reg has got a wild show. Where do you stand on the great stage diving debate of 2014?
Well, I don't, you know, I come from a scene where stage diving is encouraged. My bands tell the kids to get their ass on stage. My bands tell the kids to fucking move their ass in the crowd. And so for me, it's like, if you don't want to get stage dove on, take three steps back. I mean, at my shows, they have a wall of death. You want to talk about being in harm's way, like, and everyone fucking loves it. So I had to actually listen to Joyce Manor because I knew we were going to be talking about this. I wasn't familiar with the band. And I don't see that adding to their show, having people stage dive. I mean, he obviously put his foot in his mouth because he felt weird about stopping the show or whatever. But I just think it's subjective. Like, I don't think it's called for at a Joyce Manor show, but if you're at a Municipal Waste or a Ghoul show and you don't want to get stage dive on, I mean, it's just not an option if you want to stand up front. And if so, it just it's not going to work for everyone. But really, you assume the risk when you go into a show. I mean, at a punk show, it's not moshing and stage diving isn't something that came out last summer. It's ingrained in the lifestyle of the live music. So you really are assuming the risk when you walk in. And more often than not, it's the stage diver that gets hurt. I've gotten injured dozens of times stage diving, and I haven't caught a stage dive in a couple years, and who knows if I will again, but I have to come down as pro stage diving. But I also, if a band wants to tell people not to stage dive, that's their prerogative too. And then there's going to be the fan that's going to stage dive anyways. You know, there's like the guy at the Fugazi show, and Ian's like pointing at him and being like, "You're an asshole. Stop doing that."
And you're going to be escorted out.
Yeah, but then that same guy, it's just like people are different. You know, that same guy won't stop, but he's screaming back at Fugazi, "You're my favorite band." You know, it's like the guy who steals merch from his favorite band or something like that. They don't get it, but they love it. And you just kind of have to accept that. And also, punks are weirdos and, you know, generally nonconformists. So it's going to be hard to dictate rules. But once again, if I found myself at a Joyce Manor show and saw a big dude stage dive, I would say what a dick. But I don't know if I'd ask him to leave.
You know, Scotty, you took a very – I thought you were going to be like, "I'm pro stage diving all the time, no matter what." So I'm surprised by your response. Basically, you said if the band doesn't want people to stage dive, that's their prerogative. And that,
I think that's fair. I think it's totally fair for a band to request that. And I know some bands would rather have people stand and watch them than go nuts. But for me, as a promoter, in the style of music I do, it's like a sign of a successful show if everyone's going nuts. You know, for me, I swell with pride at the sound booth at one of my gigs when everyone's fucking going apeshit. And some people are getting hurt and some people are being really stupid, but generally everyone's having a really good time.
So people are getting hurt is the sign of a good show.
No, I'm saying at a good show, some people will get hurt. It's not mutually exclusive. Sometimes people can get hurt. Sometimes they can have a good time doing it. You know,
but I'm sorry, Scotty, but it does sound exclusive because what you're saying is some people can get hurt. Some people won't get hurt. And hey, come to the show and take your chances.
Yeah, you're right. You got me on that one. I misspoke. You got me. It is. You assume the risk. It really is. And even, you know, the law has come down on assume the risk. And basically there was a guy who sued at a Crumbsuckers show. And because he was in his 30s, the court said, "You knew what you were doing." But there was a kid whose parents sued and it was a senses fail show. And he was like only 14. And the court came down on the side of the kid because they said he didn't know what he was getting into. He was naive and had just gotten into shows and stuff. So
That raises the following question, which really goes back to this whole central issue. The question being, who owns the show? Does the audience own the show or does the band? Now, for example, let's say I go to a dance club, you know, a real popular dance club, and I start disco dancing, you know, and the DJ throws me out because he doesn't like me disco dancing. Well, that's bullshit, right? But do we grant a different rule to bands? Can bands say, "This is how you conduct yourself at my show," or does the audience get to say how they conduct themselves at the show?
Everybody does. I think everybody does. I mean, it's both parties' show. It's the band's show, and they're putting on a show for their fans, and they're there because of the fans. You know, it goes both ways. I can't imagine a band getting off stage where the crowd didn't have fun and the band looks at each other and goes, "That was a great fucking show." It's just not going to work unless everybody's on the same page. I think that's what's the problem with this band. There's such a visceral reaction coming back at them, but it's not even necessarily from their fans. So I think they're going to fare just fine.
I guess last question along this line of thing, which I just forgot, which I had in my mind, and I just completely forgot. What was I going to say? Back to this. You know, we say Joyce Manor's punk. We say you know, Iron Reagan is punk. But the question is, are we really calling punk two entirely different things? Is there an overlap between Restoration's Menzingers, Joyce Manor, and Ghoul? Is there an overlap at all? Or has punk really, I guess, bisected or even trisected into two entirely different kinds of people, and just the reason it's both called punk is because it's got a similar origin, but they have very little overlap at all anymore?
Well, I mean, personally, I think that punk right now, and that's a great question right there.
No, well, thank you.
Hey, good job. No, I really think it's turned into a very big thing of punk has turned more into independent as opposed to smashing the state, if you know what I mean. I mean, you look at bands like that that are kind of like trying to follow their own thing and trying to do their own way. And I think punk is really talking more about following your own guys as opposed to, you know, we've got to go against something as opposed to, hey, listen, let's take our own way. And in the bands that you mentioned right there, they're doing that thing, even if they're doing major label, independent label, but it's the same thing.
It's totally subjective. It's going to mean something to different people. I mean, you want your head to explode? Like, ask that question in like a YouTube video and read the comments or something. You know, I mean, so many people have such a different idea, and people really defend what they think is punk really, really hard. And to me, it was liberating when I decided that punk was subjective, because trying to tell people what it is or isn't, or even just you got to make your own definition. And there's definitely more and less aggressive styles of the music we all listen to.
You don't see people at an Iron Reagan concert wearing sweater vests, and I'm pretty sure the Joyce Manor show is full of people in them. So,
ding!
That tells me
something. Wow.
Well, I was reading a little article, I think it was about Iron Reagan. It was talking about when did the metal bands become more punk than the punk bands. And I think when you're comparing these two bands, it's especially true. But,
well, fair enough. There you have it. Some of us are pro stage dive, some of us are anti stage dive. Johnny G comes down hard on pro stage diving. But you can make your own decision and email
the us. Definitive word, John G.
At email us at podcast@punknews.org if you want to give us your own opinion of the stage diving debate, the great stage diving debate of 2014. But let's keep this podcast rolling. We'll blast through two shorter stories, and then we'll play a tune, and we'll come back to some more stories. One of my favorite bands, Mischief Brew, has announced a new EP and a new album. The new EP will be for their single, O Pennsyltucky, and they're also putting out a video called O Pennsyltucky. The video was filmed in Centralia, PA, which a lot of people might not know, but Centralia, PA is a very interesting place. It's an old coal mine that caught on fire underneath, and because it's coal, it's on fire. So it's literally an evacuated city that is literally always on fire underground. So that's pretty wild. So I'm excited for this new cassette. I've heard a lot of the new Mischief Brew songs live. They sound really great. They sound about halfway between the last album, which was Stone Operation, and the one before that, which was Smash the Windows. So if you like either of those albums, you'll love the new songs. It's a more harder electric Mischief Brew, not so much folk stuff. And I'm down with it. I'm excited. Are any of you guys Mischief Brew fans? Any of you guys anti-Mischief Brew?
I played a show with Mischief Brew maybe like 8 years ago when I was playing in Votsec. And it's a way different style, but we played a DIY show together in Minneapolis in like a barn that was a playhouse or something. And our crowds really went well together. I mean, Votsec plays like really fast hardcore punk and thrash. And so the styles don't blend, but we have women in our band and our singer's a lesbian. So we kind of draw from across a wider spectrum of, you know, punks, like we were talking about how people identify different and whatever, you know. It's not the same crowd that you get at a, you know, a municipal way show or whatever. So we had fun with them, and I loved playing for their crowd because it's a big sing-along, happy, stinky bunch, you know, and that worked great for us. I haven't heard any other recorded material, but we had a great time that night.
Actually, along those lines, Scotty, you've been in some pretty hardcore bands. Why don't you just quickly run through a list of bands that you've been in?
Well, my first band was called Deadfall from here in San Francisco. We put out 3 7-inches and an album, and toured the U.S. like 3 times. that was really cool. That was also the first record I ever put out was for Deadfall. And then Votsec, more like a fastcore thrash band, played in Votsec. Now, we're actually still a band. We've just been really inactive. And we toured the U.S. like 4 times. We've been to Japan twice, Europe. We got to do a lot of really cool stuff together. And then other things, those are the only bands I've been in. I did some studio drums. I played on the last Star Fucking Hipsters album.
That's right. That's right. Oh, man.
Yeah, I got called in to do, because I could play double kick. Like, basically, they had an extra song that needed to be recorded, and it was, like, the metal song. And I got the call if I could put in 2 days for a pitcher of margarita and a burrito, and I was happy to do it. And then I was super stoked because it came out on Fat, one of my favorite labels, which none of the music that I'm normally playing would fit on the label, so it was really cool.
And of course, everything comes back to punk news because, as everyone knows, on SFH, Mikey Erg, our mascot, if you will, also drummed on that record, so it all comes back around. Tom or Mark, are you guys Mischief Brew fans?
I saw Mischief Brew for the first time a year ago with World Inferno, as a matter of fact. And I think that the singer for Mischief Brew is going to be down here in about a month for a release show for Everyman.
Probably as Eric Peterson, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, fair enough. There you have it. Let's talk about a band that's less, you know, less hardcore than Votsec. You know, less thrashy, less nasty, a little bit nicer sounding, a little bit more, I guess, introspective, if you will. Although not to say that nasty stuff isn't necessarily introspective as well. One of the Punk News readership's very favorite bands, Restorations, they've put out a new song. The song is called Tiny Prayers, and here's what frontman John Luden of Restorations said about the song. He said, "Tiny Prayers was probably the fastest one we wrote for LP3. I think we started and finished it maybe in one practice session." Yeah, Tiny Prayers is pretty much Restorations on autopilot. This distilled example of the band. Mark Little, I believe you just became a fan of this band.
I did. I was just thinking about that right now. I can't say a whole lot about them, except I love their album titles, LP1, LP2, LP3. We can only guess what the next one's going to be. But I put a message out on my Twitter about a week ago that I wasn't really familiar with the band, but I knew that I should have been. And my buddy Johnny, that I've talked to a lot on Twitter over the last couple of years for a lot of reasons, he told me, listen, check this out and check that out. And I just fell in love, to be honest with you. It's kind of beardy. It's almost Hot Water music-y. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I like these guys a lot.
Tom Trauma, where do you stand on the softer stuff, the gentler stuff, the fuzzier stuff?
Well, I'm not really super familiar with the band, but it kind of reminds me of like a really loud, almost like 80s style pop with really loud guitar. But when it hit the chorus, the vocal hook sort of had like a, I don't know, an 80s, like a louder version of Aha or something silly like that. I didn't hate it. It was all right.
Yeah, honestly, this is not my thing, and I've been struggling to get this kind of stuff, and I'm just not that into it. It's just too calm. Like, if I want, like, calm, soulful music, I'll listen to, like, reggae, you know, or even, like, classic rock. This just does not seem to have the depth of, and I don't want to hate on this band, because I've heard they're all nice guys, so I'm not hating on this band, I'm just saying it's not my thing, but it doesn't seem to have the depth of soul of reggae or some classic rock like Ian Hunter, and it doesn't have the raging energy of, you know, the more modern, exciting punk rock that I like.
So, you know how we said punk is subjective? This is some really good examples we're going through right here.
No, exactly. That's a great point.
Well,
okay. I checked out the song, and it's funny because I read the quote, and he's like, yeah, this is the fastest stuff we've done, and I wasn't familiar with the band. And to me, that's a very mid-paced, even slow song. But the intro is kind of cool. It's like some layered, like, fucked up style guitars. But honestly, once the vocals came in, I was just asking myself, like, who is this music for? Because it's like on Punk News and it's on Side One Dummy. But to me, it sounds like their audience is like people who, like, I don't know, people my age and older that aren't punk, but have like exhausted all their like Bruce Springsteen albums, or like the 80s Aha thing that he said made sense to me, because yeah, I couldn't figure out what it was, the music. It was kind of just like pop, rock, I guess.
That's the problem I'm having with it, to tell you the truth. It's like, why am I listening? Like, what am I supposed to be getting from this that I don't get from, you know, Third Eye Blind? And not that I'm a Third Eye Blind fan, but you guys know what I'm saying.
I get it. Yeah,
you own a sweater vest, John.
You can usually pick the audience out of a song, and that one I just don't know. Is it for like my like cool party aunt, or is it for a teenager? You know, I don't know.
They've got a very. I'll tell you straight up. I've seen this band live like 3 times for various reasons. The kids love this band.
Do they stage dive? Do the kids stage dive?
No, and actually, this is something I've talked about briefly before. Is when I go see Off. Like, and that, well, not so much now, but Slayer back in the day. But when I go see Off, when I go see Melvins, when I go see Gwar, like, afterwards, people are like, that was an amazing show. It was awesome. You know, people are, like, excited, throwing their hands up. At Restorations, people kind of just stand there. And then after it's over, they're like, that was great. That was incredible. But they're not, like, excited or, like, you know, jolted around, you know. But what can I say? Anyway, I don't want to hate on this band because I'm sure they're nice guys and I'm sure they're doing what they like. It's not Johnny G music, what can I say? But I'll tell you what is Johnny G music. Tank Crimes, that's Johnny G music. Scotty Heath.
Thanks, John.
What kind of jam, what's next for us? What jam is next on our platter?
Well, you know, I didn't really know. I just had a list here, but I just think we should go Iron Reagan because they keep coming up, and they're going to be doing – their new album just came out. They're going to be doing tour dates with Power Trip and I Hate God through the rest of the year. We've already confirmed their next huge tour for early next year and even a far further one for the spring. They're pretty much not going to stop, and then they're also planning on going to Europe. So if you live on Earth, you'll probably get a chance to see them this year. So let's just keep the buzz going. Song's off the split I did with Exhumed, and it's called Mini Lights.
And that was Iron Reagan doing Mini Lights. I interviewed the main guy that you also mentioned is Tony. I interviewed him. He's a cool guy. I've seen the band live. They're a great band live. Check out Iron Reagan if you see them. Let's talk about, I don't know, I would say either the first or second biggest punk rock band of the last 20 years. And that would be, of course, Rancid. After a 3-year wait, they're releasing their first album following, I think it's fair to say, that their last album, Let the Dominoes Fall, was pretty critically panned. The new album is going to be called Honor Is All We Know. It's out real soon, October 27, and the band has released 3 new songs, Collision Course, Honor Is All We Know, and Evil's My Friend. I'll kick us off with this. This got a lot of hate on the punk news comments section, but on the Facebook it got a lot of love. I gotta say, I was underwhelmed with Let the Dominoes Fall, These 3 new songs, I like them a lot. I mean, Rancid is not David Bowie. You can't expect Rancid to reinvent themselves on every release. They've already reinvented themselves twice. So at this point, you know, you can basically expect Rancid to put out very good Rancid-esque songs. And I thought all 3 of these songs are very good classic-style Rancid songs and way better than anything else on their last release. So I'm digging it. I'm excited for the new album. I'm not a mega Rancid fan, but I am a fan, and I dug these tracks. Where do you guys stand on Rancid 2014?
I think anytime you hear a new Rancid record, you know exactly what you're going to get. And so I'm excited about this. I mean, I don't care if it sounds like 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago. This is going to be awesome. And every time I see Rancid when they're down here, the show is packed. People are going crazy. People love it. And no, I love it. I'm really excited about it. I'm not as crazy about one song as the other two, but this is going to be great.
Was it the third one? I thought the third one was a little on the cheesy side.
It was the title track that I wasn't too into.
See, that was my favorite of the bunch. I thought they were okay. It sounded like, yeah, it sounds like they've sounded for the last 15 years. If you like it, you'll love it.
Yeah, that really just sounds like Rancid. Matt Freeman should never sing, though. that song, it was stuck in my head after just one listen, The Honor Is All We Know, and it was good. Yeah, I just don't like the Freeman verse, but it just sounds like Rancid. I'm not really blown away, but it's all catchy, and it was just right in my head right away. I like Rancid a lot. Rancid was my first punk show in 1994 at St. Andrews Hall in Detroit. And I've been a fan
of Rocket from the Crypt. And was it Rocket from the Crypt opening?
No, that wasn't the tour. Why, were you there?
No, but I saw him at a little club in Grand Rapids, which is now like a black Pentecostal church. And it was Rocket from the Crypt. And the opening act was Local Support for Mustard Plug, which is Grand Rapids' big, nice, you know, ska punk band. Yeah, that was a cool show. $10. No holla.
Ouch.
Wait, hey, you know what? I got to bring it up because I thought and I won't forget, but because you're from Grand Rapids, you know what show I saw in Grand Rapids in 95? I saw No Doubt open up for 311, and it was about 1 week before I'm Just a Girl dropped, and I knew they were going to be huge because...
Was that the Reptile House?
A, they were good, and B, they had so much fucking merch.
Was it at the Reptile House?
No, it was at like... shit, I can't think of the name of it. It's just like in the middle of a big parking lot. It's a self-standing building in like a mall or something. If I think of it, I'll blur it out.
Oh, yeah, Club Eastbrook.
I think so.
Can we just sidetrack for a minute?
All Grand Rapids all the time.
Grand Rapids, Western Michigan.
Can we just sidetrack for a minute? And I mean, really, No Doubt is a phenomenal, phenomenal band. I mean, if you ask me, they're one of the greatest rock bands or even one of the greatest punk bands of all time. I mean, I was listening to Tragic Kingdom last week because I'm 14, apparently. And I'll tell you, No Doubt is great. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how crusty you are. No Doubt is where it's at, man.
I went and saw them in a 12,000-seat arena because they had Civ and the Vandals opening. And it was a pretty cool show.
Civ was opening for No Doubt.
Civ was touring behind that second awful album, not the first fantastic album. And the guy from the Vandals went out and they sang a song from Grease with Gwen Stefani, and it was a pretty cool show. But the place was packed with 12-year-old girls, and I remember Gwen Stefani doing this sing along where it was something like "Fuck you, I'm a girl," and it was all these little 12-year-old girls singing along. I've never seen so many mortified 35-year-old mothers. So that was that was pretty cool. Exactly. It's like, there's a hockey game here tomorrow. But it was all right.
Wrapping up the Rancid discussion, well, you know
who else is good? Rancid.
Yeah, Rancid. Exactly. I saw them in a church. Oh, sorry.
You know what? I want to say, as a record label owner that I thought was awesome, and I'm going to steal it when I have the budget, I love the rollout of just like nothing, 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 album cover, three songs live, like fake live in the studio, boom, boom, boom. Like, I really, and then it's out like next week.
Yeah, actually, like, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just like that a lot. It's hard for me to, like, when I have something excited to shut the fuck up about it. I'm getting better about it. But I love that they just, you know, were able to just, we heard about the record 2 weeks ago. It's out next week. And now we're talking about three tracks that we've all, like, the way it was presented, that we all digest, everyone who listened digested all three tracks, you know. It was pretty cool. I'm impressed. I'm a steal.
But it's also taken about 6 years to record this.
Well, yeah. So, but regardless of that, once, you know, they sat on it, and now it's like, boom, here you go. As a label guy, I liked that rollout. And as a fan, I liked it.
Album life, I think we can all agree the album lifespan is much shorter than it used to be. I remember when the Beastie Boys' Hello Nancy came out, people were talking about that for a year, you know. But when, let's use an example, when Kanye's last album came out, like, before, people were talking about it before it for a year. It came out, everybody forgot about it literally 2 weeks later. Scotty, what's the best way now to, I guess, make an album a lasting thing instead of something people just forget about literally next week?
The band has to tour. That's the only way you're going to keep people's interest in like new music. That's what I found. And I've had to kind of, I've had to adjust my catalog to that, to survive. And that's what it is. I mean, if you want to stay relevant, you're relevant if you're performing all the time. So that's really what it is. I'm kind of lucky with Ghoul because they have a big, strong catalog and they're getting new fans like tomorrow that really want to dig in to the whole thing, you know?
Actually, I'm glad that was your answer, because speaking of touring, this caught a lot of people by surprise. I think it caught everybody by surprise. Megan O'Neill, the vocalist of Punch, has left the band. But not only did she leave the band, she literally left them like 3 days after their, I guess not their debut album, but the big album that everyone was really looking forward to, right after it was released. I think she might have left the day after the record release show. Here's what Megan O'Neill said. Punch crew, I want to confirm that I, Megan, have left Punch. Thank you all so much for your support over the years. For most of my life, I have been extremely shy, and writing lyrics and performing really helped me grow as a person. Thank you to anyone who ever told me what our band and my lyrics meant to you. You mean all so much to me. Thank you. I think everybody was surprised by this. I guess the question is why are bands, particularly hardcore bands, so volatile? And, I mean, well, I mean, it's got to be the end of the band, I'm thinking, right?
I mean, I don't know how they go. I ran into Megan the other day at the Skeleton Witch Ghoul show, and we've been friends for years. And I think that was the night before, like, that announcement came out. But I had heard just through the local scene that she was leaving the band. And so I was just like, hey, I heard you're quitting Punch. And she said, yeah, I did. And I said, are they going to replace you? And she said, not with my lyrics. So, But, I mean, she put in work in that band. They've traveled the world. One of the things, like, your question is, why is it so hard for hardcore bands? Punk is fleeting. Or we can go back to the subjectiveness of punk, but punk, my view of punk is fleeting. It's not supposed to last. It's great when a band sticks around, but there's never an interest in, like, a hardcore band's eighth LP or whatever. People still just want to hear those first songs, so... It's hard to keep going. I don't know. There's some legacy bands or whatever, but people are going to miss Punch big time. I think they're an important band, and I think their new album's really good.
Why is Punch important?
Because they toured. I think that's one of the greatest reasons. It goes back to touring. Punch is important because they're regular, nice people who made awesome hardcore music, like from the heart, and they took it around the world to share with people. And so they're important because of the kids they inspired to either start a band or to stage dive or to not stage dive or, you know, any of those things. They're important because they touched their fans, like, physically and, like, in, like, an endearing, heartfelt, friendly family type way or whatever.
You know, that also brings up an interesting contrast. You say punk is fleeting, punk isn't meant to last. Which I guess more or less is true. I mean, Effed Up is still putting out great stuff, but they're not strictly hardcore. But how come hardcore is so... I mean, look at Cro-Mags. They broke up after their first album. And I'd argue that's the greatest hardcore album of all time. Not hardcore punk, but hardcore. But how come hardcore is so fleeting, but heavy metal can, I mean, last for nearly ever? I mean, I love Judas Priest. Judas Priest put out awesome albums for like 35 years, you know? Why is hardcore so explosive, but heavy metal, which is also an aggressive, loud, angry music, lasts so much longer?
I think it's the nature, you know. It's kids. It's usually the first music you play when you learn an instrument and stuff, so it's easy to grow out of. It also has a lot of really strong and also conflicting ideals. And what one thing that people never bring up about the hardcore scene and the punk scene that I think is important to acknowledge is the peer pressure to do and be some of those things. And just like anything else, I mean, if you're really into something when you're 21 and you're not into it at all when you're 31, that's not weird at all. It almost might be more weird to still be into the same thing when you're, I mean, shit, I'm 36, I'm still into the same thing. So I think maybe I'm more weird than the guy who found something else, but I don't know.
Mark Little, top two hardcore bands, not hardcore punk bands, top two hardcore bands.
What's the difference, hardcore or hardcore?
Well, punk? I mean, that's the debate, isn't it? In my mind, when people say hardcore now as opposed to hardcore punk, what they really mean is music that has stemmed from NYHC, you know, New York hardcore. Basically, the progeny of the Cro-Mags, whereas, you know, Minor Threat and Black Flag is hardcore punk.
But, you know, I've got to say, New York hardcore, I've never been a big fan of that genre. So when I talk about hardcore, I think about LA hardcore. So I think about Black Flag. I think about Circle Jerks. I think about DC even. I think about, you know, Bad Brains, and I think about Minor Threat at that time. So if you want to talk about hardcore bands for me, I'm going to go between those two scenes right there.
But when people say hardcore now, they specifically mean not those kinds of bands.
Then I'm out of touch.
Well, let's all just fucking shoot each other in the face then.
Exactly.
Wait, well, I'll just myself. Actually, since we're all in different states, everyone pull out your gun, put it to your head, and just end it all so we never have to figure out what's really hardcore.
Well, as we delve... Although
the answer is negative approach.
Now you're talking my language, man. And it's finally something in my wheelhouse. The thing is, John, you're asking about the metal band. Why do these metal bands go on forever? Well, a successful metal band can make a good living. A successful hardcore band's playing for 200 kids and they still live like dogs. And that's one thing when you're 21, but it's another thing when you're 35, as, you know, us 40-somethings, right, Mark, can relate to. You know, we need a certain more level of comfort in our lives, unfortunately, at this point.
I think that's the answer. And actually, let's keep this discussion going because this is interesting. How come punk rock bands will only charge $8 and everyone's like, $8 is the most pay to see a band, but heavy metal bands will charge 25 or 30, and the metal fans are like, yeah, that's a fair price. And I do think that's a fair price. But why do we have that mentality?
Well, most metal bands are also playing in much bigger venues than your average punk band is.
But is that by design or by demand of economy?
What's the difference?
The difference is the following: is if you aim low, you're going to hit low. If you aim high, you might hit high.
Well, I know the metal shows here in big places, and the punk shows can't fill the small places. You know, it's just supply and demand. Grand Rapids has always been a metal town. We got a wide selection of metal shows, and, you know, to get 60 or 80 people out to a punk show on a Tuesday night is a minor miracle.
But I bet Triumph is going to sell that place out.
I don't know about Triumph, but, you know, like...
Y&T will. Definitely Y&T.
These terrible, like, bands that are on Epitaph now, you know, they all look like... 12-year-old girls with the eyeliner and all that, you know, they draw a good crowd. They play for 5,000 people.
Scott Heath, what's your opinion on the extremely low price of the modern punk rock show?
You know, it works for me.
Oh,
Yeah, you know, as a promoter, I think bands should charge more. I think they're worth more. I think they don't value themselves high enough. But I they also know they're fans. I mean, what battle are you winning if you charge what you're valued and no one comes? It you're beating your head against the wall. Once a punk band becomes professional, then you can argue again what their motives are. But I think that why the prices stay low in the underground is because that's what the underground expects. That's what the underground can afford. And the fans don't want to imagine the fact that the musicians that they love are considering making money off it, even though it's a totally legitimate thing.
Is that Crass's fault? I love Crass. I'm a mega Crass fan, but I think that's Crass's fault.
Well, I think in general nature, punks are anti-capitalist at the very least. And so, you know, a $25 to $35 to $55 metal show... you know, some of those bands cash in, and a metal fan values the band like that and is like, they should be cashing in. And a punk fan might look down on a band that's appearing to cash in. And then what happens is then the punk band actually has to lose some of those fans and to get a new audience. I had this like figure I tried to figure out. It's like, every time, as a punk band, every time you double your audience, you kind of have to lose like 15% off the back end because they won't go with you. And that's just the nature of punk. And that's not going to change. So it's really up to a band where you want to fit in right there. But I can tell you, with Tank Crimes, working with punk bands and metal bands, the punk bands on my label save up money before they go on tour to pay their bills and to have money on the road and to be able to pay out of their pocket if they want to stay in a hotel room, stuff like that. They all have jobs and do that responsibly. The metal bands on my label, come home from tour and pay, get paid out and pay all their bills with the money they made on the road. And so the bands aren't, to me, the bands are all great, but that's what the fan base, that's the reality of their fan bases, of the style that they're choosing. And I don't see it really changing. And, it's one of those things like going on a war against, $5 shows just ends up making you look like an asshole, and you got to pick your battles, even if you strongly think everybody needs more money, you know?
Sage words from Scotty of Tank Crimes Records. I'm loving the theme of today's episode. The themes of today's episode has developed into itself. What is punk rock? And let us further crawl down this cavern, this labyrinthine cavern, as into what is punk rock by talking about one of my favorite bands, and I know one of Mark Little's favorite bands, World Inferno Friendship Society. They're putting out a new album on November 11th via Jello Biafra's Alternative Tentacles. They've released a new song. The new song is called, it's Italian, it's a Dolce Far Niente, which is me speaking Italian, the fatherland, the Paisan language. The new album is called This Packed Funeral. I dug this. I'm super excited for the new album. Mark Little, where do you stand?
I am about as stoked as you, if not more. I love the Inferno. I've been a big Inferno fan for more than 10 years. And, anybody that's not into World Inferno Friendship Society, they need to start discovering it right now, because they're going to take over your life. They're going to change your life forever. They're amazing.
Will this new album win over new fans? I mean, it's very Inferno-ish, you know?
I don't know. You know, I've only heard a couple songs from their new record, and honestly, the last record was so, and I don't want to say this in a negative way, it was so down, it was so slow and really moody, and it wasn't like the previous records. And this new one kind of brings up that new spirit, I think. And I think people really need to check it out. I can't say enough good things about this band.
Scotty or Tom, are either of you guys Inferno fans?
Not particularly. They're I should try to dig into them a little more. They definitely have.
Well, you should be.
They have a unique sound. I'll give them that. I was kind of checking them out, but I might be able to get into it. But you know, there's certain things I try to get into year after year and don't have any luck. And how much effort are you going to put at a certain point? So anyway, I'll try a little harder next time.
I promise. Let me just seeing this band live. It'll change your life. Absolutely, they are absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't see myself listening to their albums ever, but I caught them live in DC a few years ago. Government Warning opened up for them, and I happened to be visiting friends in Richmond at the time, so I drove up to DC, and the live show's great. I can see tons of people having an amazing time seeing them live that might not buy the album or even think to put it on when they're not at the show. But I'd see him again. My friend Greg was their tour manager for years. I don't know if he's still working for them. But
Greg Daly, the guy with the long dreadlocks.
Yeah, Greg's awesome. I love Greg.
He still is. Yeah. I saw him at the Kicker show.
All right, let's hear it for Greg. Greg booked and tour managed Kicker on that tour. Yeah.
Exactly. No, that's exactly
it. Greg, I love you, Greg. Great guy.
Fair enough. I guess the last question about that. Scotty, that wasn't at the Black Cat side room, was it?
Yeah, Black Cat side room, D.C., with Government Warning.
Like 6 years ago or 7 years ago?
Yeah, it was about 6 or 7 years ago.
You there? Scotty, I was there!
Yeah, so we were at a World Inferno Friendship Society show in D.C. together and the Mob show in Oakland together over the years. Sounds good.
Punk rock connections all over. Let's wrap up tonight's podcast with the final story. Mastodon have released a new video. The video was for the song The Mother Load, and it caused a little bit of an uproar, I guess, because it's got girls twerking in the video. Drummer and singer Brand Daler had to say, after the band got accused of sexism, Brand Daler said, "I don't know. I don't see the sexism in it. I know there's half-naked women that are shaking their butts. For some people, it's titillating, but for me, it just looked amazing. I thought the girls were awesome and talented, and I thought it was amazing to watch. I love it when it turns into that kaleidoscope effect thing. It brings the video to a whole new level." So basically, he's saying he doesn't think it's sexist. I gotta say, I don't think it's any more sexist than the other music. It's got girls dancing, you know. I'm not trying to be controversial here, but it's got girls dancing, and I mean, thinking a girl is attractive is not sexist, and I think that's kind of where punk rock is at right now. Objectifying a person so that they're only a sexual object is, I guess, sexist. But I don't think that's what this video does, frankly. And also, I mean, let's be real. This video is kind of poking fun at Nicki Minaj's Anaconda, right? Right?
I agree with you completely. Completely agree with you. I mean, there is a big satirical part of this video as well that wasn't mentioned in the original story that I posted. But you're absolutely correct. I think that, yeah, people can look at it in one way, but seriously, you can't look this as being any worse than any other video that was on MTV 10 years ago.
The good news is, too, I don't think any average Mastodon fan really gives a crap what the PC police say is misogynist. So I can't imagine they're going to lose any fans over this.
No, they're going to gain tons of fans. It was a really good move for a corporate rock major label band. I mean, the video is going to get so many views because people like to look at asses. It's like, hey, we need a new video. Like, what's a good idea? Like, I don't know. What do half the population of the earth do every day? Oh, they masturbate to pornography. Let's make a halfway pornography video, you know? What's really huge right now? It's like, what are the biggest, like, Us Weekly stories of the year? Oh, Miley Cyrus twerked. Like, it's a really obvious way. It's even a cheap way to just drive interest into, you know, just kind of like a decent song or whatever. I'm not anyway here or there about it, but I've also listened to the song three times more than I would have had if they didn't have those slow motion giant booties shaking around. So
you're saying Miley Cyrus masturbates to corporate metal videos?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Did I get that right? Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure.
But the idea, as far as it being sexist, I mean, the entire video is women being objectified. I mean, I know they signed up for it. I know they paid and got well. But if you kind of boil it down to what is and isn't sexist, it is. I don't think that's their intention. I'm certainly not offended by it. I'm turned on by it. But I can't take away from anyone who's bummed about it. But it's another one of those things where I think half the people that were bummed only clicked on the video because they already knew they were outraged because they heard they were about to be outraged by the fans. So they had to click on it and watch it, which for Mastodon, it's fine. They just get another, YouTube pays a seventh of a penny for every view. So, you know, they're raking it in.
So you're saying they're
Spotify.
You're saying they're bummed about bums is what you're saying. But I would say that I think people are kind of losing their sense of humor. I mean, this is supposed to be, like, Mastodon is a heavy metal band. You don't expect, you know, like, pop or hip-hop dancers to be shaking their booty in a heavy metal band.
I mean,
that's the joke, right?
Their place in our society is a heavy metal band, like a popular mainstream one. I mean, they're never going to, because of it's 2014, they're never going to be like Motley Crue. But had they been there at the time, maybe they would be. And, you know, I mean, is this really, it's girls, 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 2014.
Well, hardly. I think this is Girls, well, Girls, Girls 2014 with a way bigger wink and a nod.
Because I'm a huge Crew fan, but I think it goes along with my point. Like, plus, but also, it's very American to be outraged, and we really love being outraged. And Mastodon are giving some people something to be outraged about until, like, sure, tomorrow.
True. At least they're not giving the fake apology.
Yes, at least they're
not. I'm glad they give the fake apology. I mean, it just seems sincere. It just totally seems sincere. They're like, dude, we're a metal band. I thought this was a good idea. It worked.
Last question to Scotty Tank Crimes. Scotty Tank Crimes, Van Halen or Motley Crue, where do you stand?
Oh, Van Halen.
Oh, thank God. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, and Van we're not Halen. Talking about Van Hagar, even though they got a couple tracks, I'll admit. But David Lee Roth is like the greatest frontman in the history of rock and roll.
Thank you.
I believe that.
That's what I'm talking
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. And I saw Van Hagar twice. Never got to see Van Halen with Diamond Dave, but I did see Diamond Dave's solo tour on his first solo album with like Just a Gigolo and California Girls and stuff. And he came down through the Palace of Auburn Hills, the Detroit Pistons basketball arena. He came down on a surfboard. For California Girls, he's a fucking badass.
That's
Dickie Rose.
And he's what, an EMT in New York City? He's fucking awesome.
No,
he's
now he lives in Tokyo because he wanted to learn Japanese. I'm not even kidding you.
There you go. You know, some people don't waste away their greatness. Some people take it to the end. So I wish the best for Diamond Dave. Van Halen's way better than Motley Crue.
Well, there you go.
Diamond David Lee Roth.
Scotty, you answered correctly. Therefore, you have won the following. Scotty, please play for us one final Ten Crimes track to get our listeners salivating about the hard, the nasty, the exciting West Coast Bay Area jams.
Well, I gotta bum them out. Let's hear some Dystopia. This track's called Sanctity. Mm. Thanks, you guys. Cheers.
When Ed awoke on March 1st, he was filled with a self-loathing he could not endure.
I had no desire to continue living with all the problems that were inside my head.
Unable to make a living, at age 49, Alex walked into the woods near his house and shot himself. I have taken my life in order to provide capital for you. It's purely a business decision. I hope you can understand that.
I have to undergo the constant pressure from auditors, and it's more than I can stand. I just don't have the energy to start over. I didn't want to mess up the house, so I'm back by the canoe.
Dr. Frank Dobinson had a distinguished and productive career. He had a wife and kids. To all the world, he appeared to have a rich and happy life. But at age 56, Frank walked out to his favorite beach in Pensacola, Florida, shot himself in the head.
Dearest Samantha, I can no longer endure the pain. I can no longer endure the pain. I can no longer endure the pain. We have often talked about when a person's time is up. Mine is now.
Oh.
And that was Dystopia. I'm a big Dystopia fan. Check those out. Thanks again for listening to the Punk News Podcast. Tom Trauma, thanks for your debut appearance. I think you did pretty well. I appreciate you coming in here, talking about, you know, Negative Approach and all the, you know, old school Detroit hard hitting stuff.
Thanks, John.
Mark Little, as always, down in Miami. Thanks for, you know, talking about the world in front of with me, slapping fives and talking about the booty shaking music.
Thanks, you guys. I love you guys, and good to see you, Tom.
Yeah, you too, Mark.
And Scotty Heath, Scotty Tan Crimes, thank you so much for blessing up with your presence, bringing your knowledge, bringing your wisdom about punk rock and heavy metal. But let me say, not only do you have wisdom, not only do you have a certain sagacity, but you are very grounded, down to earth. You're not scared to call a duck. That's what I'm saying, Scotty Heath.
Thanks, John. I had a really nice time, man. Thanks for inviting me on the show. And anytime you need me to be a loudmouth about something, man, just hit me up.
Fantastic. And as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And we'll see you next week.